Rachel, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am delighted to have you on the podcast. Now, for those that have just tuned in and, they're not sure who Rachel Sands is and what Aura Group is, the company you currently work for, can you just give us a bit of an introduction into who Rachel is and your background? So, Rachel, over to you.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here, Georgie. So thank you very much. I started my journey into this kind of a little bit following the footsteps of my father. He was a family therapist and a leadership coach. And so I'd always had the people lens around me. And it was really through this as a child, I spent a lot of time with Virginia Satir, who was one of the well-known pioneers of family therapy. And I remember spending time with her and just the power of how she made me feel. It was profound. It was positive. She was warm and confident as a female. And I really admired the impact that she had on this world. And she was one of the first females that really started to inspire me. I then later on in life went on and I had got 2 degrees, one in psychology and another in communication. And with that, there are so many different options that you can do. You can go into management consulting. You can go into the FBI. You can, become a negotiator. You can be a psychologist. You can work for a nonprofit organization. And for me as a young adult, it was a big decision because that's your initial career sliding door moment. And, it's going to depend on whatever step you take. So what I did is I took some time off. I did 6 months of traveling around the world, doing some volunteer work, went to different countries, worked in different nonprofit organizations. And when I came back to Arizona, one of my professors, Dr. Nider, he inspired me to actually look at and think about management consulting. And he encouraged me to have what's called an information interview. So it's a little bit different than having a normal job interview. What you do is you talk to someone who works at a company or in a role that you would like to do. And what you're doing is in a very non-threatening way, just asking some questions and gathering information. And I'm throwing this out as a useful tip for people because it is quite powerful if you want to get connected with a company and you want to start to create a bond with them. So I did this with Ernst & Young. I went and I spoke to someone. I asked about the role that they do, what the company is like. And when I actually applied for the Ernst & Young consultant entry program, I got the job because I had shown interest. I had shown potential. I'd asked good questions. They had a chance to get to know me. And therefore, when I applied, I had a sponsor. And that worked really well for me. And I then realized that when you get into management consulting, it's a really steep learning curve. And as a woman, you have that inner critic imposter syndrome that's knocking in your head and wants to come through. And it's difficult sometimes because it really plays in your confidence if you don't know what you're doing. And I didn't have a business background. I had to get up to speed really quickly and look like I knew what I was talking about in front of clients. So you get through some of that and learning how to, quiet that negative self-talk by, acknowledging to yourself you're on a learning journey. Everyone is different. You have to stop comparing yourself to other people. They're on different points of your journey and you are where you are supposed to be. And if you can believe that and remind yourself that, it does start to quiet some of those negative thoughts, but you can't flip it off like a switch. You get stronger when you practice different techniques, but you have to keep doing that. Doing it once is not the quick fix. And we're all human. We get challenges all the time. Things that we think we've learned come back around and they challenge us again. What management consulting did help me understand was, different industries, different organizations, different people, different countries. And it, gave me that initial grounding on business in general. And what I do believe, and you know, for everyone out there, is, you know, the more experience and exposure you have to different roles and industries and different companies, the more tools you start to build in your toolbox over time. You might not think about it, but you might be drawing on that knowledge and the experience and the capabilities that you learned 10 years down the line. So everything that you do is valuable. And if there are people that would like to make a career switch, then, you know, I am one that has done that. I'm fully supportive of people doing that if that works for you. For me, you know, after 7 years in management consulting, you know, I lived in LA, that took me to Japan. I then had an opportunity to make the switch into HR and investment banking. I had not done HR before. And I got this opportunity through a network connection. So the more conversations you have with people about what you want to do, the more chances you will have of a door opening eventually. So for me, who used to be really shy and quiet spoken, I had to push myself out of that comfort zone. So I would, you know, I would encourage you to challenge yourself, even if it's to start to have one conversation. Do that because you're doing something for you. When I made that change, I have Elspeth Renshaw to thank for my transition into HR and investment banking. She was a great leader, and I encourage everyone to learn as much as they can from what good leadership looks like. Of the leaders that you've had or the leaders that you have now, take it all on board. You know, for me, when I looked at Elspeth, she was smart. She was very calm in all situations. And anytime anyone spoke to her, they left feeling empowered. And again, when I looked at that, that was another female in my life whose impact I really admired. And I learned a lot from that. You know, on the flip side, you can learn a lot from really bad leaders as well. But what you want to do is take the good that you want to entwine into your life. Investment banking then brought me to Australia. And it's not hard to love Australia. I really wanted to stay here. And after a few years, I realized that in order to do that, I needed to work for an Australian organization. So I then spent the next 8.5 years working with the National Australia Bank, or NAB, and MLC in different head of people roles. What helped to shift and grow my career during my time with them, and this is another tip for people, is showing interest in helping other areas of the organization, plus forming really good working relationships with your internal clients, because this will lead to other opportunities. It might be a special project. It might be your next role where, you know, someone is really taking a gamble on you because they see your potential. So this led me to work on different projects around customer segmentation, high-performing teams. I, you know, joined spinning off the MLC life insurance business, and when you form good relationships, you gain those sponsors, and it was really those sponsors that helped me grow and make those changes. So after I left NAB and MLC, I started my own consulting business. I worked with the likes of the Reserve Bank. I partnered with other consulting firms to help their clients. I did some early intervention and recovery work, which was the business role that I had when I helped spin off MLC Life Insurance. I even went and got an MBA so that I could learn more about just the business side of things and feel like I was a little bit more relevant and wanted to broaden out my skills. And it was really, you know, after a few years of doing that, I actually started to crave being a part of a team again. And that's when the opportunity with Oro came up. And I saw that's a great opportunity for me to use my past skills and capabilities, help scale up an amazing technology company, But more importantly, it was the leadership team that solidified that decision for me. I met with the then CEO, Rod Pinnico, and COO, who is now our CEO, Dan Greengarten. And as soon as I met with them, I knew that I had struck gold with leadership. They made it really easy for me to transition away from financial services to technology. And they listened to ideas. They let me put my hand up to expand my role in different areas. And I always try to give people the advice to think more broadly outside of the role. Think as if you are part owner of the company that you work for. Because how you think and how you approach things will be much better and more successful because you're thinking like one team across the whole company, not just within the confines of your role or your silo. So even though I was hired as the chief people officer, I showed interest in ESG. And so now I've got ESG in my remit as well. And the great thing about this was they gave me the opportunity to work on our full modern slavery assessment and modern slavery statement before we were required to do that in Australia. And that's a pretty big deal. It's something we felt really important about. And they supported me on that. We also became a climate active certified carbon neutral organization. They sponsored me to do the next stage of that work to really look at our net zero strategy. So how are we going to reduce our carbon footprint over the next 6 years, over the next 10 years? What are we going to do? And we're now executing on that plan. The one that's really close to my heart is the fact that we donate 1% of our time and 1% or more than 1% of our profits to charity. And we focus that on education, because what we're trying to do is empower people in their lives, give them a chance to, you know, break any negative cycle that they may have in disadvantage. So we've done things such as connect children living with disabilities to technology in their classroom so that their learning can be tailored for their disability. We help Indigenous females to complete high school by partnering with the STARS Foundation. And we take that a step further and go into the schools and talk to all of the girls about careers in STEM, careers in technology, let them ask questions and get them interested so that if that's something that they really want to do, they can make those decisions about, you know, what do they study throughout the rest of their high school experience. We also have around 20 scholarships to help people study technology if they want qualifications or they want a degree. That then comes with the optional ability for paid internships so that they then gain real work experience and we can connect them to our graduate program. So it meets our aim of connecting people to meaningful employment. So that's something that I'm really passionate about, as well as our women in technology.
I want to talk more about the women in tech piece in a second. I want to just savor that because that's going to be a really interesting conversation in itself. But I just want to pause there because that is quite the resume, and I'm sure people listening to this being like, "Wow, what a story!" But there's key pieces in the story that I want to just sort of dive into because you said so much incredible things. Then I just really want the audience to just really just take in a few points that Rachel said. Right, number one. I love the fact that you did that information interview. That is absolutely gold. I think that this is something that we talk about a lot on the podcast about how, you know, your network is your net worth and making sure that you're engaging in companies, you're doing your research. Okay, if you've got an idea, if you want to work for a company, go and reach out to a few people in the business, get visible, learn more about the company and what the vision is and what they're trying to achieve. So that's absolutely gold. The piece around starting at EY, I want to dive into that more because you had all of those inner critics and I'm fascinated with how, especially as a young female, you stepped into that role and excelled. So I want to dive into that. You also talked about pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, which is huge. the networking piece was so crucial as well. There's a lot in that, but just quickly take us back to younger Rachel starting that new job as a management consultant with ER. You mentioned imposter syndrome, because there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast, Rachel, that are going to be in that boat right now. They've just started a new role or have just made the transition into a new organization, a new role. How did you overcome those inner critical thoughts, that imposter syndrome? Take us back to some of the tools that you used in those moments.
Sure. My father used to teach me a technique which he calls pebbles and ripples, or pebbles and grenades. And it's what I use to really try to help calm my own negative self-talk and inner critic. And it's really an important tip about how do you transform your emotions or really strong feelings in a way that not only changes your state of mind, but does so in a more positive way. And so I'll try to explain it. If you think of an event, it might be words that someone has said to you that disturbs you. That is the pebble that's being thrown into the pond of yourself. And pebbles are external to us. They are things we perceive. They can trigger ripples. So when you throw a pebble into a pond, the water ripples. And that is what causes the emotional disturbances. There are some times when you can strengthen yourself and you can throw a pebble onto, let's say, the ground. The ground is not going to ripple. So think of the ripples as that, you know, emotional trigger, that emotional disturbance. When the ripples are really, really strong, they can become grenades, but I'm going to keep this as very high level because those feelings that we feel can give us information about ourselves and what I call jewels, or what my dad called jewels, and can be also be values. But to see how this works, I'll just, let's assume that a colleague has said something to me that has triggered anger in me. And then these are the steps that I would take to use that situation to my advantage. So, you know, after they would have said something that angered me, what I need to do is let myself feel it. So I'm not trying to reject or resist how I'm feeling. I'm letting myself feel the anger. I welcome it, and then I listen to it. And as I feel that anger, I ask myself, what is this feeling saying that I need? And maybe what I realize is that I need respect. You know, this is a message from my deeper self that respect is really important to me. And it's one of my values or my jewels, as my father used to say. If I then affirm that quality in myself as the next step, I own it and I say to myself, well, I am respectful and I have the capacity to show and give respect. And I honor that about myself. And then what you do is you commit to act on the message, not necessarily the feeling. So I look at the outside world again. I look at what were the events that led my colleague to say something and those words that, you know, triggered that anger. I think about, you know, what's the outcome that I really want from the situation? How would I wish to approach it? And I commit to myself to interact respectfully with the world. And it's just that act of listening to yourself, affirming that value in yourself. It actually starts to dissipate that negative self-talk, because you're honoring something about yourself and you're not giving the other person the power to tell you how you should think or feel. And, you know, I'm not always perfect in managing all of my emotions throughout my life, but this is, you know, what I call a very simple and profound process. And, you know, over time, you start to begin to master your thoughts instead of your thoughts mastering you. And that, to me, is a very important part of self-mastery and also an important part of resilience. You know, in the corporate world, we talk about resilience a lot. You know, it's that ability to bounce back when you're in a challenging time. One of the things I actually teach resilience sometimes. Resilient people tend to have positive beliefs about themselves, and this technique helps to transition your emotions into more positive beliefs about you. But also reframing a situation or challenging event, if the pebble and ripple analogy helps to do that too. And I thought, if we talk about resilience at all today, I thought in the concept of reframing, I was going to just share a small part of a poem that I use in the training. So the poem is called The Worst Day Ever by Chaney Gorkin. And it's really powerful because you can look at exactly the same situation and people will have different perspectives. You can look at it glass half empty or glass half full. So I'm just going to read a few lines, but the poem says, "The reality creates my attitude, and it's all beyond my control. And you'll never in a million years hear me say, today was a very good day. But if I look at those same words and I read it line by line instead of top to bottom, but bottom to up, it's the same thing, but a very different message. So if I read it backwards, today was a very good day. And you'll never in a million years hear me say, it's all beyond my control. My attitude creates the reality." Now, I didn't put the whole poem in there. The whole poem is pretty powerful when you read it top to bottom, but you know, anyone can throw a pebble that can land in your pond and ripple, but it's how you respond and how you look at it that is going to impact you the most. So I love to honor all the different components of resilience, but yeah, really the core foundation here to take away is to remind yourself that I control how I think or feel, not others or the outside world. So I am the master of my meaning. And that's a really powerful concept for all of us to learn because it helps us empower ourselves.
I completely agree. And that story about the ripples, because we are our own worst enemies when it comes to this. And as you were speaking there, I think that we're almost taught in society that these negative, quote unquote, emotions, and they're not negative, that all emotions deserve their place and to be felt, are bad. Anger's bad. And I think what's bad is the suppression of anger, the suppression of those, I guess, more lower vibrational emotions, not the feeling it. And it's how you express it. Like, obviously, there is a bad way to express anger. There's also a good way to express anger. And if we listen to what's the anger trying to tell us here? Like you said, maybe I'm not being respected, or maybe that goes against my values, or maybe that's triggered something that actually I need to heal in myself because maybe I'm holding on to something from my childhood. But I also love the quote. It's a quote I heard the other day. I don't know, Rachel, if you follow any of Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, but he says something profound. He says, our personality becomes our personal reality. And every single time I hear that, I think to myself, what am I putting out today? Because whatever I put out, I'm going to get back. And it makes me very aware of my thoughts, my feelings, and my behaviors towards myself and others. And yeah, that poem then was just so perfect because it illustrates we don't see reality as actually reality is. We see it through the lens that we look at from. And there's always something. There's always something to take away from a situation, positive or negative. And it's the lens that we look through that really defines it. So powerful, powerful stuff. And God, I wish I had grew up with a therapist. I feel like I would have probably been able to deal with a lot of my my issues in my life a lot better. But that's really powerful stuff. And so for those people listening to this right now, it's the awareness piece, it's the resilience piece, it's the honoring those emotions. That's what counts, is what I'm sort of gathering from what you just said there.
Yes, that's true.
Amazing. So I'd love to sort of dive into as well your experience with going into your, like, doing your own business, because that as well is a massive pivotal career moment as well. What drove you to want to do that? Because that's a huge, like, you've got to really back yourself. So explain, like, what it was like to go from, like, I guess, being an employee to a sort of an entrepreneur. Did those imposter syndrome, did that come up again? Like, how did you navigate that? What was that experience like?
It was scary. And I gave myself 6 months to see, can I make this work? And if not, I'll just go back and find another corporate job. I was lucky because my very first client off the bat was ANZ Bank, and doing some early intervention and recovery work with them. So that gave me something immediately to jump into. I kept getting referrals from people who I knew or people that I had worked with for, you know, small HR pieces. Or we've got a really small company. We don't have an HR team. Can you just come and give us some help with this? Or I know someone that is really having some issues. Can you represent them in, you know, an employee relations way? And I think the thing that also helped was building relationships and networks with other small consulting companies. And when they had work and they needed someone with my background, they were able to pull me in. But it's scary in the beginning when you don't know, can I make this work? And the only way that you can really do it is to time box it and give yourself a challenge. Because when you have a goal and you say, I only have 6 months to make this work, then you've got greater focus, and you have to make it work. So I was able to get past the 6 months, and I had my business for about 4 years before I joined Oro. And, you know, I did really like the work and I loved mm-hmm. But as I said, I just really wanted to be part of a team again. And I love working with people and I love belonging to something.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me because I love running my business, there's no denying that, but I would find it very lonely without Pam. Like, we'll have days where things are just not going the way we want them to go. And she's always there. And we're just like those sounding boards. If she's up, you know, she'll bring, and I'm a bit down, she'll pull me up. And it's just, I totally understand because there are days when you have your own business where if I didn't have that sort of, I guess, that support and that person there, I would be the same as you. If like, oh, this is a tough day today, but there's no one there to share it with. There's no one there to discuss it. So I totally, when you said that, I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you joined Oro Group, which, and by the way, can I just say, I've had such a wonderful experience working with that business so far. I met with Sharon the other day. What a truly inspiring technology leader she is. I mean, wow, I'm going to get her on the podcast as well. I've already said that to her. But you mentioned about the leadership team being really inviting and really supportive. And I think that is so, so important because everything stems down from the leadership team, as we know. And if they're not on board, you're not going to be able to implement what you want to implement. So what about them that made you go, this is the company I want to join? Because I imagine you could have had your pick, you know, of companies. So what about the leadership team that were you drawn to and that you really liked?
There was really transparent, honest, open communication. You know, no egos. You know, the first time I met Dan Greengarten, he made me laugh. And I knew that, okay, he's so smart and he's so well-spoken, but he can make me laugh. I'm going to have a great time. You know, Rod was so thoughtful and considerate and really easy to speak with. And then as I met the rest of the leadership team, everyone was very different from each other, but very cohesive. And maybe it was because I had been in banking and investment banking, there's a lot more competition in financial services. And I just didn't get any of that ego here. And everyone really wanted to look at, well, how can I help you be successful? And that to me was a team I wanted to be a part of.
I love that. And I actually think that could be a slogan for every single leader. Imagine if every single leader woke up every single day and said, how can I make my team successful? What can I do? What can I bring? What energy can I bring into today to help my team? I just think that's so, so powerful. But you mentioned as well at the start, your passion for women in tech. So can we dive into that now of like, why are you so passionate about getting more females into technology? Something we both share, Rachel. I'm very passionate about that as well. So what was it about, you know, women in tech that really got you lit up and excited?
One was the small percentage of women that represent the technology industry. It's just above 20%. And I didn't realize it was that low. So I wanted to do something to help create a path for people. But one of the things that really inspired me was a very passionate group of women inside of Oro who wanted to start a women in tech internal network. And they came to the CEO and myself and they said, this is what we want to do. And we said, do it. We completely support you. It should come from you. It should not come from the executives. And it has anyway. So do it. They put together some great initiatives, great speakers. You know, they were inclusive with anyone across the organization. But the thing I really valued about them was I used them a lot as a sounding board. So when I wrote policies, I would give it to them and say, read through this. Have I been inclusive enough? Have I forgot something? Do you have any ideas that I haven't thought of? And, you know, please, you know, give me feedback and let me put out a much better product. I had them look at the benefits that we had coming in the pipeline. What are the benefits that we have now? What else are we not thinking about? And they gave me some really good ideas about how to help women in different stages of their lives. So, you know, we offer all of these discounts now with fertility treatment. We give paid fertility leave to men and women. But for women, we also have paid menstruation leave, paid menopause leave, because you have people at different ages and different stages. With the parental leave benefits, we upped the paid amount of leave. We also added leave for, you know, parents that are going solo. And, you know, you find that a lot these days that someone may be a solo parent. So why not give them some extra time because it's harder for them on their own? We also put in place return to work bonuses so that if people came back to work, we'd give them a cash bonus to help them settle back in because they probably have more expenses to be able to come back to work. But we just thought through, well, what else are we not thinking of? What else can we do? And that women in tech team have really been valuable, very valuable to anything that we do. So I have many different times in the year where I use them as my sounding board and I check in with them or I just ask them for feedback on anything, even the culture.
Mm-hmm. I just want to just say how powerful that is because people in a business, they want a voice. And I love the fact that you're asking them what's important to you. What do you want to see? What more can we offer? Because I do find a lot of companies that, you know, I do speak with week to week. They want to hire more females into their business. They want to support women. But then when I pull behind the curtain and say, well, okay, diversity is one thing, inclusion is another. What are you doing when these women join your business? Because I can find you the females. They're out there. But what are you doing to keep them? What have you got in place? What kind of perks? What kind of offerings? You know, what's the culture like? That's what I really want to explore and understand. So what do you think Oro is doing well, Rachel? Because there's a lot of businesses that will listen to this, a lot of HR professionals that, you know, they want to hire more women, but they want to keep the women. And women are leaving technology at quite a high rate at the moment because of the cultures and the organizations that they're working for. So let's go. What are people doing well and what are people not doing well? Because I think that comparison is really good. So let's start with the good thing. What's Oro doing really well? And what have you seen other companies not do so well?
One thing I think we've done well in terms of developing what our company values are, again, that didn't come from the top down. What we did is we asked a whole cross-section of people across the organization in different levels to come together and create what our new company values are going to be going forward. Because Oro is a, you know, it's a combination of over a dozen companies that have come together. And so everyone came from different values and different cultures, and we needed to create one for ourselves. Before that group of people got together, we had an email questionnaire go out to the whole organization to tell us what they wanted. So how do they experience us today? So we knew the good, the bad, and the ugly, but what did they want us to be going forward? And that information went into the workshop with the people that were chosen to create our values. And some of them were volunteered, you know, by someone else, or they volunteered themselves. What Dan, our CEO, and I made sure was that we weren't in those workshops. You know, we welcomed everyone for the day, but we removed ourselves from the conversations so that we didn't influence any of that. So the values that we came up with were then really from our people. And that's really nice, because it's something that they can get behind and they can own. What we then do is make sure that we honor how people live those values. So yes, we've got our recognition programs, but we share the stories. What are people actually doing? We share that in our town halls. We give people cash prizes for living those values. And we are continually trying to keep that on the surface so that people don't forget. And so in terms of culture and what I think we're doing right, I think the honest and transparent and open communication is something that's really important. And, you know, we've tried to do that at different levels to really ensure that people are heard, that they feel valued, that they have the information, because that's really important in building trust in the culture. And the other thing that we're really working on and that we understand, and I think we're doing well, is just the development of leadership and really giving a great foundation on leadership so that people can have, you know, a good leadership experience, and that we're continually empowering that and growing that. But also, we invite our women in tech community to join our leadership programs, whether they're a leader or not, because we're also trying to help build their confidence and their leadership, as well as emerging leaders. But I think one of the other things that we do really well, in addition to our ESG programs, is also just having fun. And, you know, one example is, you know, during COVID, our CEO, Dan, was hosting a trivia, an online trivia, and we were getting together around the different states and the countries on this trivia. And I just cannot remember laughing so hard, because he's so engaging and he had a way of making us all feel super connected, even though we were on video. And, you know, COVID was a really hard time when people were not coming into the office and feeling really disconnected. But there, you know, that's just one example of some of the things that have been happening along the way that have really connected us and helped the culture.
Amazing. And then on the flip side, you know, you've worked in enough organizations. Yeah. Now, what is a bad culture? Like, what are some red flags?
Wow. I've worked in organizations where people are only in it for themselves. They're not thinking about the team. They're not really thinking about the success of the company, only their own personal gain. So they might, you know, they might talk bad about people when they're not there. They might throw people under the bus. And to me, that's not really operating with integrity. And that's also not very nice. And I've really enjoyed leaders that when other people come up to them and they complain about someone, I love it when I hear a leader say, well, have you actually spoken to them about this first? Because if you haven't, you really shouldn't be coming to me unless you already have and change hasn't taken place. And I've had a lot of organizations that I've worked with in the past where everyone worked really long hours, and that's normal, but there was no thank you. There was no recognition that people were doing their job. They were always quick to criticize, but never quick to say thank you. And, you know, those types of places, you can't survive for too long. You can do it for some time, but it will slowly start to suck the soul out of you.
I can put my hand up and say I've worked in one of those organizations. And it was definitely like punishment over praise. It was just like, that's not good enough. Nothing was good enough. And even if I felt like I'd had a really great week and I'd done everything I wanted to do, it was always pinpointing the things that hadn't gone well. And they did it, I think, to sort of try and drive us to be pushed to like for that hunger and get better. But it had the opposite effect on me. I actually ended up really getting quite anxious and overwhelmed. And in the end, I left that business and went somewhere else and really excelled in a company that did praise and did, you know, not that I think I want to be reliant on external validation, but it's a nice feeling to hear from your manager, "Great job, Georgie. You did that really well. You handled that situation really well." That's a nice feeling. And you're right. I think like, especially when you're working late, you just want to know that it's being acknowledged and it's not just being expected. And that's really, really key. And the leaders that I've worked with do that effortlessly. And also they wouldn't expect their people to do something that they're not willing to do themselves, which is equally important. And I think is what builds trust and respect. But I want to just sort of dive in, Rachel, before we sort of, I guess, start wrapping up the podcast today. You did touch upon a word that I believe 2025, New Year's coming, the AI revolution is here, tech is advancing. This word of resilience, I do really believe we're going to need it in a bucket load. But there's a lot of people that fear change, that, you know, are very risk averse. How can people work on this? Because I do really think this is one of the top skills of the future.
For those people that are risk averse, I think they need to set a goal with themselves to actually innovate in their own self and to make small improvements and move forward so that they don't become obsolete with just the skills that they have. And it's making sure that negative self-talk doesn't get too strong, because we all have so many abilities to grow and do more things. So I think if people give themselves a challenge to take on something new, to learn something new, to embrace, you know, what AI and the future is going to give them, they'll be fine. I think it's for themselves, if they plan on doing that, it makes the change easier. It's usually if you have a more risk-averse mindset and all of a sudden you have to change, but you haven't prepared yourself mentally, that's when it becomes something that might cause anxiety and you know, a lot of feelings of being scared. So I think it's really just honoring yourself and honoring your strengths. You can still play to your strengths and be risk averse, and you can still be really strong and move forward and do great things.
Amazing. You have achieved a lot in your career. So, I mean, you've really done so much. You've also worked in multiple different countries and had that vast experience. So what is going to be next for you? What are you interested in? Like, what's next for you at Aura Group? What are you working on at the moment? Anything that's exciting right now?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, because what I would love to do is more performance coaching and really help people unlock their own potential, their own success. But right now, with the Aura Group, what I would love to do is help Aura scale even more. It's a great business. It has a strong offering across IT services. we've got so much potential. We've got some exciting things in the pipeline. I'm very excited for the future. And I really want to be a part of that and double our size, double our impact. And it's just really exciting to be a part of that journey.
I love it. Well, it sounds to me with you as the chief people officer, the sky is the limit. Those foundations have well and truly been laid. And I believe everyone that joins the business will have a wonderful experience and contribute to the company's mission and culture. So Rachel, honestly, it's been wonderful chatting with you today. Where can I send people? Where do you hang out the most? I'm guessing it might be LinkedIn. That's where most professionals hang out.
Yes, anyone can contact me on LinkedIn. And, you know, I am open and loving to connect with people. So yes, please find me there and, you know, let's create a new network.
Amazing. Make sure you do go and connect to Rachel, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been a real honor.
Thank you so much, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.